You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Mac, you ever seen a movie called Sullivan's Travels?
No.
That's part of your problem, you know. You haven't seen enough movies. All of life's riddles are answered in the movies.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 109 for the 20th of November, 2010. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fine, but I realized I'm, like, mildly out of camera shot.
Yeah, and also, like, audio listeners can't hear your fingers.
Yeah, well, they should be tuning in live.
They should be, and we'll come back to that in a minute. We're also joined by Celine Roberts. How are you, Celine?
Hello, David. I'm very good.
I like the post-mic work.
Welcome to the
Guys,
Sun
Vacations. Doing whatever it is you're doing. Should we do a show?
Yes, Josh, we should.
That's really gross.
My voice isn't deep enough.
All right. What is this? This is the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And in this week, we are going to review The Unreviewable because we are actually going to try and review half a movie, which kind of annoys me. But
yes,
we will come back to that because, of course, we are reviewing Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have seen it, you'll know what we're talking about, and we'll talk about this more in the review. We also have an Entertainment Buzz, but of course, this week Entertainment Buzz is actually kind of trailer heavy, because this week the biggest news was the fact that we had a flood of new trailers come out. So we'll have a look at some of those. We'll go as many as we can in the hour. And of course, we have our new list of five, which of course is a user-requested list of five.
I think before we start, though, we should kind of make a pledge to each other, and I think the chat room should get involved in this too. We should all promise not to bag each other out for our choices, because this is a very sensitive
matter. I had a whole plan for that.
I think we should all be a bit polite about this.
I want to go on record and say that I think it's quite
Josh needs to move his microphone a little bit closer to him.
As a geek, it's very hard to say. But more as a male than anything, we're not allowed to cry.
Exactly.
It's an unwritten rule. It's an unwritten rule. Of course, I'm joking when I say that. And to ask us to bring out the movies that moved us that emotionally is a big call.
Okay, you may have figured out by now that the list is actually films that have made you cry.
And I want to say, Delta, it's a very personal topic, man. Mm. And this shows how much we love our viewers.
Absolutely. And no, we won't be bagging each other out. Sometimes we criticize each other's choices, but we've got to really stop doing that, because these lists are personal for all these lists are personal. And of course, they're personal choices. So
I'm not going to stop bagging you out for the movies you choose, Dave.
Well, we know.
This week is an exception.
Yeah. No, I'll never stop bagging you out.
I know.
All right. So I actually had to turn to my lovely wife, Katie, for this list, because I don't cry in movies a lot. And it's not that they don't choke me up. It's not that they don't move me emotionally. I'm just not a big crier. And so, like, I can
It's hard to cry in a film.
That's right. I sit there and and the thing is, I think about it this way. When a film puts a lump in my throat, I know that at that point, if I can turn to Katie, she's in tears. it's that lump in the throat that is actually, for me, that is like...
And it doesn't necessarily have to be crying from sadness. It could be crying in a scene that's really good where you're like, yes!
And a couple of my choices are exactly that. Because he didn't specify sadness.
I don't
specified,
know if any of mine are, but
he specified crying. Now, my
actual name for my list is the list of sappy films.
Sappy films. Oh, dear. All right, so we will come back to that. And thank you, Delta Knight, in our chat room for recommending that list to us, and we will come back and we will get in touch with our softer side a little bit later in the show.
Yes.
And normally at this point we would go straight into our feature film review, but because we are so trailer heavy, and let's face it, we are Geek Actually. Mm. This is a Film Actually show, but we are Geek Actually, and so geek things have to take priority. And quite frankly, I don't think there was anything bigger this week, geek-wise, than the trailer for Green Lantern, which is a film that we have actually talked about a lot on this show, speculated on it and, you know, thought about it and talked about it and so forth. Well, the trailer finally got released this week. Let's have a look at it and then we'll talk about our opinions. So here's the trailer for Green Lantern.
No. Sorry, I gotta run. Make yourself at home, okay? There's water in the tap.
Hal, you're late. This test today, it's important.
I'm gonna make you look good up there, don't worry. Now let's get these pants off and fly some planes. When I'm flying, it feels like if anything is possible. It's like no matter how bad things get, there's something good out there, just over the horizon. The ring, it chose you. Use its power to defend our universe. Become one of us. Become a Green Lantern.
The ring sends us a great responsibility.
Responsibility? You?
Let's hope so.
Anything I see in my mind, I can create. The one thing that a Green Lantern is supposed to be is fearless. That isn't me.
You have the ability to overcome fear.
Wow. I know, right?
What happens now?
You go look for trouble. Brightest day, blackest night.
Okay, let's open this up for discussion.
I'm going to go on a limb and say that, look, I have not really been a fan of the idea or concept, and I've said that many a times, and I look at that trailer and I go, well, at least it doesn't look really camp.
It looks fun.
Look, that's pretty much like, yeah. If it's better than Daredevil... and not as good as Iron Man, that's about where I'm putting it. You know, somewhere halfway between.
Okay, Celine.
It looks like I'll be entertained. It looks like I'm going to rock up and be like, yeah, cool, this looks like fun. He's going to punch some people and there'll be aliens and maybe a few hot chicks. Yeah, it looks like fun.
Hot chicks? Really?
Yeah.
At some point. It's a movie. There's always a hot chick at
Interestingly
some point.
Enough, I actually watched the trailer with my 11-year-old, who is a massive comic book and superhero nerd. I mean, let's face it.
But
huge.
Is he a Green Lantern fan?
Yes, he loves Green Lantern. He loves Justice League.
See, I know nothing about Green Lantern.
Oh, no, I'm a big Green Lantern fan as well. Yeah. And I got to tell you, it checks all the boxes. All the right characters are there. And you look at it and go, oh, there's, you know, there's. And yet... the trailer left me completely cold. And my son...
What were you expecting, though, Dave?
I was expecting... when I watched the trailer for Iron Man, I went, yes! You know?
No, one or two?
One. You know, this one... when I saw the trailer for Iron Man, I went, thank God, because I love Iron Man, too. This one, I'm getting... and I hate to say this, but I'm getting kind of Jonah Hex feel from this. And I could be wrong, and this is an early teaser, and, you know, we will see another trailer, and this is a year away still, I mean, 9 months away or something like that. We will see another trailer, and I'm hoping it just feels way overproduced. You know, I don't like his costume. And it's not the CG element of it. I think the CG element's a great idea. I don't like the design. It doesn't look like Green Lantern's costume. It's the wrong coloring. It's like when they redid Superman's costume for Superman Returns. You know, you sit there and go, it just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not even, it doesn't even have to be super faithful to the comic book. We saw Batman, you can move away from that, but it's got to have the same feel. This doesn't have the same feel. And it's interesting because my 11-year-old, little geek, sat there and at the end of the trailer, this is exactly his reaction. He just went, huh. And that was it. And it's like, wow, that didn't even spark it in you, you know? And I kind of felt the same way. I kind of felt like, really, that's what we've been waiting for all this time, all this talk. And it just, It didn't. Do you know what it is? There's no connection to it.
See, I ever since they announced Green Lantern, I know nothing about Green Lantern. I haven't followed Green Lantern. I could if I wanted to, but I just haven't gotten around to it. So it's kind of like,
I would actually
I don't know anything about Green Lantern, so I watched the trailer and I'm like, yeah, it's a movie. Cool. Mm.
I would actually go as far as to say, I don't think that it looks like Jonah Hex, Dave. No, it's not actually,
Jonah Hex vibe.
No. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I would say if I was going to put any vibe on it, it would be the vibe I got from Speed Racer's trailer.
Oh, yes. That's
it's
good
that
too,
hyper,
yeah.
It's that hyper-stylized, over-CG'd everything that just completely detaches your ability to connect to it.
Yeah, and it's like the Green Lantern planet. Like when he goes to the core, right? And there's all the Green Lanterns and it's all really heavily CG overproduced. I would like to have looked a little bit more real. You know, I'd like the halls of the Justice and all the area where the little guys are and everything to be solid. It doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel tangible. You know, and that's the problem. Is it all just feels a little overproduced.
Well, look, I mean, I'm going to hold off at this stage sort of putting any things on it. I'm not disappointed in the trailer. Like, I was like, it's a teaser trailer at best. It's them throwing together a whole bunch of little scenes. The scene where he does that punch and punches three guys.
That's great.
Yeah, stuff like that. As long as there's lots of that in it, then they'll win in my eyes. I mean, I don't have, like, I mean, it's going to be a really interesting film for us to do because you've got a huge backstory in it. And me, I don't give a crap. I actually really didn't like, I really didn't like most of the Green Lantern comics I've read. I'm just like, this is just the, you know, basement fantasies of those nerds we try and avoid on a
general
thing.
Look, I want to see more. I want to see another trailer.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend anyone with that.
I want to see if we can actually get more from it than what we're actually seeing. But I just, at this point in time, I kind of just went, huh.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll see. We'll see.
I just kind of felt like, really? That's the best you got, you know? It's kind of, and that was kind of the vibe I got from it. But anyway, I could be completely wrong, and the film could be absolutely amazing.
It's far too early to tell.
It is. It's too early. We will find out more as we go along. All right, let's get into this feature review, because we've got all sorts of stuff to talk about, and we're already running a little bit over. Feature film review this week is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, directed again by David Yates. Now, David Yates, I'm so happy they've kept him on because I really like David Yates' style. And I remember when he directed Order of the Phoenix, I thought, poor guy, because he did such a good job in Order of the Phoenix, and yet it's the weakest of the books. And I thought, you poor schmo, you've been brought in, got all this style, but you've been thrown in on probably the weakest of the books because it's a real, lots of teenage yearning. And I thought, boy, I really hope they give you another chance. And they did with Half-Blood Prince, which was awesome. And so he's been brought back again to finish it. So it's been this nice continuity over the last three films, which is kind of nice. All right, so directed by David Yates and written by Steve Kloves, who has actually written all of the screenplays of Harry Potter except one.
Oh.
I don't think he wrote Order of the Phoenix. I think that's the one he didn't write, but he's written the rest of them. He's got a really, really tight relationship with J.K. Rowling, who this book is based on the book by J.K. Rowling, of course, and he has a very tight relationship with her, so he's really in tune with the whole thing. Film again stars Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, Rupert Grint as our three boys and girls. Ralph Fiennes returns as Voldemort, Bill Nighy, Alan Rickman, Helena Bonham Carter, Jason Isaacs, Julie Walters, and I'm not going to go through the list because it's just about every classically trained actor in the UK is in this film. It's great
cast.
And in fact, one of the things I do love about this film is the fact that they have basically brought back almost everybody who has been in this series at one point or another back into the fold for the finale. So we're seeing everybody in this. Now, the synopsis for this is Harry Potter's seventh and final adventure told in two parts. Harry and Ron, Hermione race against time to finish Dumbledore's work and find the Horcruxes to destroy Voldemort. However, Voldemort's power is growing stronger. He now has control over the Ministry of Magic and Hogwarts. Harry and his friends are no longer supported by the professors, and little hope remains for the trio and the rest of the wizarding world as Voldemort's darkness gains power. I mean, that's kind of loose, but that's basically it. All right, and without giving too much away, because, of course, it's only the first part is also the problem. Let's have a look at the trailer, and then we're going to discuss this. I think there's a lot to discuss on this film, because I came out of it feeling I've got a couple of things I want to talk about. But anyway, here's the trailer for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
These are dark times, there is no denying.
Tell me where he is.
Our world has faced no greater threat than it does today. But you can't fight this war on your own, Mr. Porter. He's too strong.
We have infiltrated the Ministry.
You have nothing to fear if you have nothing to hide.
The longer we stay here, the stronger he gets.
I must be the one to kill Harry Potter.
We need to get off the streets, get somewhere safe.
I'd say we get undercover before someone murders him.
That way they won't know which Harry Potter is the real one.
They are coming. They are coming.
Nobody else is going to die. Not for me.
We have to do something.
You think I don't know how this feels?
No, you don't know how it feels! Your parents are dead. You have no family.
He's after you, Mr. Potter.
Tell me where he is.
You really don't stand a chance.
I got him! Help me!
Gotta love that music, though. I've always been a big fan of the score. Although, funnily enough, that doesn't feature heavily in this one because John Williams didn't do this score.
There's, oh, really?
They're rehashing his music. Mm. John Williams actually only scored the first, I want to say, four. After that, other people took over because he's got other things to do. Okay, what did I think of this film? I'm going to say, first of all, that we're setting a very dangerous precedent for filmmaking where we go, yes, it's a very long book. Let's split it into two parts. Mm. This is the first of two that we know of straight off the bat. The second one, of course, is the last Twilight book, which is being turned into two films as well. And quite frankly, I'm not liking this trend. Mm. When I pay money for a movie,
I want
a beginning, a middle, and an end. I want it to tell the story, you know? And I don't want to have to wait 6 months to come back and watch the second half. I have no objections to watching a 4-hour long movie.
Yeah.
I say bring back intermissions. You know, I say I would love to have seen 2 hours of this, have an intermission, go get a drink, have a pee, come back and watch the second 2 hours. No problem. I watched Dances with Wolves. I saw Spartacus. I saw 2001. I watched the Lord of the Rings movies. I have no problems with sitting in a cinema for a long time. And considering that the first Harry Potter is 2 hours, 30 minutes long, the first one is, and that was for young kids because that was a much older film with a much younger audience, they had no problems with watching a long film as well. If you are invested in the film, you will stay with the film.
And if it's interesting.
If it's interesting, absolutely. So first off, let me just say that I don't like the idea of splitting films up. And people say, well, what about The Lord of the Rings? Lord of the Rings is different. It is a true trilogy. Yeah. It is three books that are a continuous story.
And also three separate parts.
Well,
at the end of
one, where everyone splits off, it follows each story. So
that's
can split up.
And you can split it up.
It's in the titles as well. It says Fellowship of the Rings. Right. That's the story of the
Each one actually has a beginning, a middle, and an end, even though there is a continuous story.
Exactly.
Yeah, it said three really big books.
That's right. And they managed to, and we were watching 3-hour films.
Yeah, exactly.
And
3.5-hour films.
We had no problem with watching that long a film. This film should not have been split up like this because we are getting invested in the story. We are moving with the story. And let's face it, in The Deathly Hallows, the book, the first half is slow moving. Mm. The second half is where all the action takes place. And so you've got all this buildup.
Yeah.
And then it's like a premature ejaculation because you get all this buildup and nothing happens.
Exactly. I wouldn't know anything about that.
You know, and you sit there and go, crap, that's not where I wanted it to end because I was there with the film.
Exactly.
Now, that being said, I actually really liked what I saw. Mm. I just want the record. So I'm going to put a caveat on everything I'm going to say here and say it is impossible to review this film as a standalone film. Mm. I need the second half and then put it all together and review it as one film.
Yeah. Mm.
So I'm going to say my opinions on this first half with the caveat that I am allowed to change my mind once I've seen the second half.
Yeah.
But so far, how are they going so far? I think they're doing pretty well so far. I think they have kept really faithful to the book. Mm. They have really worked on that whole angst that these kids are going through, that their lives have been basically turned upside down and they've been shoved out in the real world by themselves. Mm. There is a lot of waiting around, and that is because in the book there's a lot of waiting around. They don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're stuck. When they do actually make a decision and a plan, like going into the Ministry of Magic. I was thinking about the bits in the film where, like, they go to the Ministry of Magic because they need to get something from there. Or they go, there's that sequence where they're actually at Malfoy's house.
Yeah.
These sequences are really good, and they're all build up to something much bigger that is coming. And, I mean, Helena Bonham Carter plays psychotic so well. And she's wonderful in this. I mean, she's wonderful as that character, which is the same character she essentially plays in everything, but it really gets her a chance to revel in playing that character in this. And she's never really been able to until now. Mm. And we're going to see a lot more of her for the second half of this film as well, because she plays a very big part. So I actually enjoyed it. I liked it. And I think that had it been a complete movie, I would have liked it even more. Now, I'm go on the record as saying I was a big fan of the last one as well. If you really liked Half-Blood Prince, this really is a continuation of Half-Blood Prince. It's got the same style, the same feeling, the same pace even. It just doesn't finish.
Yeah.
And that's the bigger issue. Pass it on to you.
All right. Well, unfortunately, I absolutely disagree with Dave. And I'm actually going to go on record to say that my reasoning is actually the same as Dave's, though, because it's half a movie, I feel incredibly ripped off. I don't care what you want to try and tell me when you're making, you know, your excuses for why you split this into two movies. You've made me pay $15.
It's a money grab.
No, but worse than that, for me is I got to the end of that. Now I'm waiting 6 months to actually finish this?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry. That is completely unacceptable. I got to the end of this film and I was like, oh, thank Christ we're going. I was so bored because I know a good director can knock that together into a 3-hour film. I don't care. There's a lot of subject matter. Fine. Directors have done it before, right? And it's possible to do it. Splitting it into two parts does not make it work.
Well, we also point out that Order of the Phoenix and Goblet of Fire are both bigger books than Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. And another thing about it is...
And a lot more happens, God.
Exactly.
Number four, Goblet of Fire, is chock-a-block with action. And they managed to make a fantastic film out of it.
I understand trying to bring out the angst, and I understand trying to make all the situations with these individual characters, you know, and sort of build
gazing
up the tension.
Gazing moodily at each other, and then she
all that
puts
sort of
her
stuff.
Head on his shoulder.
Right. A good director can do that with two eyebrows, like from across a room with two decent shots on a character, right? You can completely capture a mood in 10 seconds, right? You don't need long, drawn-out bits. And that's unfortunately all I felt about this movie. There were a couple of scenes of decent action, and unfortunately, my biggest gripe with this film is that it walks the line so heavily between a kid's film and an adult's film. Yeah. And it's like...
I didn't get that, because I don't think this is a kid's film in any way, shape, or form.
No, absolutely.
But
that's
occasionally throw in those little lines that are like, oh...
And that's my problem,
Let's entertain the five-year-olds in the audience, like the kids sitting behind us.
That
you know?
Kid should it's never have of, been at that cinema.
No, definitely. He kept very quiet the instant it got very scary. He sort of piped down a bit. But yeah, it's sort of... There were kids in the audience. There were very young people in the audience, too. So...
Let's be very clear. This film is rated M. It is recommended for over 15-year-olds for a reason.
But this is my problem, is it's like, I understand that, you know, they're trying, like, there were unnecessary, like, if you're going to show horror, which is what the last book is all about, this is the intenseness of the reality of magic, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've gone through the schools, we've seen the positive sides. This is like life. The whole story is basically like life. It's like you get to see all the wonder and magic and
all
that.
It's Harry's journey through growing up. That's
exactly.
Right.
And this book here is dark, right? And during the scenes, maybe it's just because I'm a huge horror aficionado or something like that, but all of the scenes where there were these really intense things just left me completely cold. I was just looking at it going, I don't feel horrified, I don't feel shocked, I feel bored. And that
because
was
they know
point.
That there are going to be 10-year-olds in the audience, so they hold back. Every time something scary is about to happen, they pull everything
back. The film is aimed squarely at anything between a 13 and a 17-year-old market, okay? Because in America, it's PG-13, so it's aimed at that 13 to 17-year-old market. We have to understand that they are young adult readers. What do they call it? They call it... young reader series or whatever it is. It's not adult readers, but they're not children either at this point. The audience for the Harry Potter books, and this is one of the very clever things that J.K. Rowling has done, is the audience grew with the books. So the first book is aimed at 11-year-olds. The second book is aimed...
And we read it when we were 11. 11,
and it's aimed at 12-year-olds. It's aimed at 13-year-olds. It's aimed at 4... So you grow up with these characters.
Yeah.
And so and the age of the books actually gets more mature as each book goes along.
And look, Josh made a very good point yesterday. I was ragging quite heavily on J.K. Rowling and saying she was a hack for reasons that were not very backed up with much logic.
Celine just doesn't like
I just
Harry
don't like
Potter.
Her.
See, I think she's actually a very good writer.
No,
I like
but he made
a
very good point, which was... Sorry, I just bashed the mic. Sorry, audio listeners. Which was she has managed to hold an audience and have the books and the characters and the themes grow with the audience. I read number one when I was 11. I'm now 22, and I didn't read 6 and 7, but after reading all of them and getting up to 5, they became more and more adult, and you have to hand it to her. Like, that's not an easy task to do, and
like,
congratulations for her
as
for
an example,
pulling that off
when
and keeping her audience.
She actually said because she was questioned about this whole thing in the fourth book, when she introduced death.
Yes.
Where she kills off Diggory, and you sit there and go, she said, it's that time.
Exactly, and
we
even
have to
book number 3 is pretty dark with Sirius Black and the Dementors and everything else, and she can write in a way where she can allow it to flow and grow with her audience.
And this is also also something they've managed to do with the films as well. Because if you go back, and a lot of people criticize the first two Harry Potter films.
Because they're very kids.
And they said they're very kids. They're based on books aimed at 11-year-olds. These films
I think I saw the first Harry Potter film when I was like 13 or 14 or something.
They're PG rated.
Yeah, I had no issue with being a kid.
And by the time we get to this film, we're aiming it at the 16, 17-year-old market. We're aiming it at that age group.
Yeah, and you know? this is the whole thing. It's like suspense would have been a better tool than, like, you know, sort of violence and intensity. I mean, like, I throughout, up until this point, have been, you know, even mildly scared of Voldemort as a viewer. Like, you're sitting there and you know this guy is bad news and he will do evil things, right? This guy was like kids play, man. This guy isn't evil. Like, I mean, I didn't get the sense. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
once again, though, and this is where, this being half a film, his evilness comes out in the second half.
And this is why it fails. That's because it fails as a film because I have no attachment or no ending to it. It's like when we get to the halfway mark, you don't just stop.
It's coitus interruptus. It is absolutely... We're right in the middle of doing it, and they go, that's it.
Yeah.
Lights up, out you go.
That's
you
the
know?
Thing. One of my issues with this film was that I haven't read book 6 and 7. Oh, my God.
Oh, this is another very valid point. I like this.
I haven't read the books, and I sat down
Which
in that
books,
film, 6 and 7.
Right.
I read up to 5. I skim read 5, at 5 at best. I was like, Sirius Black dies, cool, whatever, I don't care.
Spoilers!
I found, if you haven't read them already, go to a freaking bookshop, you hicks. they're not exactly difficult to read. I have an issue with these books because I even had this issue with the fifth film because I, as someone who hasn't really read 5, 6, and 7, I go and watch this film and I actually have no idea what's going on because they're not explaining to me who these characters are.
Oh no, they're expecting you to be
happening.
Invested in
they're
the
They're expecting
entire
me, no, but this isn't fair. They're expecting me to already know what's happening.
No,
what
they're
expecting.
What they're
expecting.
What they're expecting is you to have seen the previous films.
But
no, and I disagree with that because I rewatched the series very recently, probably about a month and a half ago. I have no idea who some of the people that they were talking about in that film was. It's asking you to know stuff that even me, a month ago watching the entire series, I still don't know what they were talking
but
about.
But another thing that really bothers me about the Harry Potter
like, just
series...
people. Like, I mean, things like the little goblin, fine, but the other goblin, who the hell is he?
He's from the fifth film.
Yeah,
he's an Order of the Phoenix.
But only just. He kind of rattles about in the kitchen for a bit, and it's sort of like
that's
a very throwaway thing.
No, they're very clear in the fifth one that he is
But they're not. They That's are the thing. In the Order of the Phoenix. As someone who skim read that book and didn't really follow it that much.
I'm talking about the movies. Let's talk about the movies.
Yeah. But again, in the movie, I found 5 hard to follow. 6, I was lost. Absolutely lost.
I love 6.
6 was...
5, they
no,
actually...
I mean the book, the film.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the film. Yeah. I wasn't lost in the Half-Blood Prince, I thought was brilliant.
At least in Half-Blood Prince, they kept it tight. They kept it
focused. I agree with that, yes.
Yeah, no,
was Half-Blood Prince 5?
No, that's 6.
That's 6.
What did we watch yesterday?
That was 7, part 1.
What the fuck? Hang on, what happened to number 6?
Number 6 was the Half-Blood Prince.
Which one was number 5?
Where spoilers, that Dumbledore died.
Oh my God, seriously... These 3 films have just mushed together in my
head.
Well,
that's because it's the same director and they have one continuous flow of...
This is exactly why I hate these films. No, really, it is. It's I don't follow them. They introduce 50 million different characters at once. Mrs. Twigbottom from Hunkleberry, and it's sort of like, I don't know who that is. They're throwing in... No, but it's like, again, even yesterday when we were watching this, they throw in characters, they throw in spells, they throw in plot nuances, and as someone who hasn't read the books, I can't follow it. Like, I could not follow it. That scene where he kills the snake in the house, and it's like...
He talks to her in...
Well,
he doesn't kill the snake.
She does, but
no,
he...
No, she doesn't kill the snake.
Who kills the
snake? Snake's not dead. They just escaped. They teleported out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
okay,
true.
Again, totally lost on me. Something happens, the window exploded.
Yeah, that's because they jumped through the window and right. evaporated as they went out.
Right.
Well, more... Like, I mean, I can get kind of the underlying of what you're trying to say. I mean,
it's just the way the film was put together. It was boring... scenes where they talk and then there's them looking wistfully at each other and acting terribly. I'm sorry, but the supporting cast are the only people who are holding this film together. And then there's all of a sudden a really, really sudden action sequence. That action sequence at the wedding, everything's fine and dandy. Some blue orb comes in, someone says something, and then all of a sudden there's Death Eaters fucking all over the place. Yeah. What the hell was that?
I don't actually have a problem with that, but I do agree with her.
I didn't have a problem with that either.
It just felt choppy. As someone who hasn't read the book, it felt choppy.
I don't think you need
to.
I think reading the book is irrelevant to that. I think that film. It's plot-wise, and I had no problem following that plot. I haven't read the book in quite some time, and I had no problem following the plot.
Yeah, again, lost on me, totally lost.
I don't agree with her completely, but I will say one thing that I do agree is, to me, if I watch The Lord of the Rings or The Star Wars or anything, right, I could give anybody any one of the films, right, in no order, and they would still be a really enjoyable experience. The problem with Harry Potter in some ways, I find, and this is just a small gripe, I'm not putting this on a thing, that movie there in particular, the latest one, 7 Part 1, as we're calling it.
That's what they're calling it.
Yeah, no, really struggles in my eyes because that one is one that just, it is completely requiring you to know everything about the series. And I do think that that's something that you can fix with a few lines of exposition or dialogue or just... Maybe a reminder.
Maybe try to make it a little clearer.
Like
imagine
mum and pops who takes the kids to the films, right? For them to achieve, you know, optimum viewing experience, you want to just remind them because they may.
Here's an interesting point for you though, because we often complain. Yeah. Collectively, we often complain about the dumbing down of cinema.
Let me
finish. So the point is that we sit there and we go. God, we hate all the exposition. Why don't they trust that we'll go along for the ride? When they do
this
that, we sit there and go, we need more exposition.
This is the case, Dave, because we're not 7 films deep in these situations. We're a 2-hour block of knowledge. We're not talking about 6 years of films that I've seen, right? If I watch every one of those films once, I won't remember stuff from 1 and 2. Right? I'm saying it doesn't take much in a film. If you're going to split this into 2 parts, you've got time on your hands.
That's true.
Okay? You've got time on your hands, and it's not too difficult to throw me one line of dialogue explaining who Creature is. I'm just saying, something like that. It's like, you know, you're still here after blah, 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 or something like that. Okay, in a film like that, where I've got 7 parts deep,
and you've got 1,001 characters constantly adding new characters to the mix,
you're failing as a director if you don't.
Exactly.
You're failing as a director if you don't think, shit, I've got 7 films behind this, and I've personally directed 3 of them. People might need a refresh, and it's just. I actually was definitely not to the extent she was because I mean I know
she's hating.
I'm not hating the film. Look, it had
you're hating.
It had a few scenes that were really good. Some of the action scenes were fucking brilliant, but again, the start was all over the place. It was like really boring, didn't grab me, and then all of a sudden there was this big action sequence, and then all of a sudden the big action sequence just ended. And I was like, whoa.
Pacing
was shocking. Once again, I was bored. I was restless and I wanted to leave.
Do you know what it feels like to me? It feels like to me they had a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
And they said, let's split this into two films, but we need to expand each of the halves to fill 2 hours.
Mm.
So they actually had to add an extra half an hour to each of these movies to fill it out into two films. Whereas if they had left it as 1 3-hour movie, it may have worked a lot better.
Scenes, as an example, and this isn't in any way a spoiler, the scenes of travel when they are traveling along their way could have been cut down into 5 minutes. Mm. It did not need to be 5 minutes.
We could have
minutes.
A travel montage.
They're actually trying to emulate the book here, because about a good third of the book is that in the countryside traveling.
Yeah, but Lord of the Rings was just travel.
That's true.
So, it's we look at stuff
and there's
like
some really nice stuff that happens. There's some really
four,
nice stuff.
Film number three, like, we're talking about books that are bigger than books 6 and 7, and these films are just...
They're what they want to head to, and I'm sure that if you actually went and talked to them, they're saying we're heading to this epic conclusion. And so they needed to give space to get to that epic conclusion. And that's great. The book does have an epic conclusion. The problem is that we didn't need to spread this over two films. And this is where this biggest gripe in this film comes down
to
is splitting it into two films.
That's the thing. Like, I got to the end of the film, and it actually really picked up towards the end. I was bored through most of that film, and then towards the end, I was like, hey, hang on, this is getting exciting. Mm. Now I actually care about these characters. I'm invested in them now, finally, after 2 hours.
Also, I mean, David Yates has actually managed to get the best performances out of those three leads throughout of all the directors in the past. I mean,
yeah. And you know what? Kudos to him for doing that.
Absolutely.
Because really, I think the casting of the kids is terrible.
Well,
I've never been with Daniel Radcliffe, and it's a supporting cast. I'm sorry.
No, see, I disagree. No,
I've
disagree.
Never been with
completely
him.
Completely disagree with you. I think,
disagree with me all you like.
I think
the supporting cast carry this film along.
I think Daniel Radcliffe is fine. The one that I actually was Freaking always...
Rudolph, what's his name?
Well, Rupert Grint is playing... Yeah. I mean, that's Ron. I mean, Ron is just like that in the book. But the thing is...
Exactly.
Yeah, he's like that in the book. The biggest issue I had was in the first three films, as fun as she was, because she was a little snoot, Emma Watson was terrible as an actress.
Oh, yeah.
Awful. And as she's grown up, the last time we saw her truly
Again, I actually put that down to good casting, because I think the fact that she's that snobby
person... Well, her
character
changes.
Yeah,
anyway,
no. Until you get to Goblet of Fire, and this is where I was going. Goblet of Fire, she is dreadful.
No, but this is
because
the whole
she's
thing.
Lost.
She's
lost
that almost like borderline social retard.
Maybe, but David Yates has managed to take her and actually turn her into a relatively fine actress.
Yes.
She's doing a great job. In the last film and this film, she's doing a great job. She's getting a lot across with a look, with a nuanced emotion. You know, you sit there and look at her and go, you're actually probably the finest member of the young cast now. Mm. Whereas I wouldn't have said that three films ago, you know? Mm. So he is doing a good job. And this is what Yates does. I mean, Yates is the guy who brought the original miniseries of State of Play to the screen. He is a good character. He's a good actor's director, and he is bringing that to the table, much more so than Chris Columbus in the first two films, who really is an awful actor's director. You know, he's a visual director.
But that's the thing, when you actually go back and watch film 1 and 2, it's the same supporting cast, they're the same brilliant, accomplished, amazing British actors, and they're all just like, oh, fuddy-duddy, this and that.
Because they're doing caricatures.
Exactly, because they're doing caricatures, and... It was funny when I watched 1 and 2, even as a kid, I remember thinking, these are all really great actors, and I was kind of...
Quite frankly, the best
me.
Actor in parts 1 and 2 was Richard Harris.
Yeah, so it was
and
great.
And unfortunately, he died.
Exactly. So it was great that in the other films, these really accomplished actors kind of get to stretch their muscles and really do some proper acting, because
well,
that just didn't
good,
happen
though,
in
because
1 and 2.
Kind of everybody has to step up the level, and these guys immediately just step
and they
up
know
the
how
level.
To step up the level, because they're all in their 50s and 60s and they're all very accomplished people
and they're all brilliant actors.
And they're
I mean
all
when you're talking
actors.
About when you're talking about Alan Rickman, and you're talking about unfortunately Maggie Smith wasn't in this.
Maggie,
she'll be in the second half, because
they
haven't
in
actually
the last one.
Yeah, she was, because they haven't got to Hogwarts yet.
Yeah,
once we get to Hogwarts, we'll get back to Maggie Smith.
And every single cast member who plays a teacher of Hogwarts are all brilliant, and you know, Bill Nighy is fantastic in anything that he is in, and even Ron's parents are great.
Oh, well, Julie Walters,
yeah,
is
like
just
they're
fabulous.
Really fantastic people. So,
and do you know the other two actors who have actually developed into quite fine and funny actors is the twins.
The twins are awesome.
Yeah. They're awesome, and they were actually quite embarrassingly bad in the early films, but they have really developed into these fine characters, you know?
But I guess that's the risk of having a cast where half of the cast are children.
And they're growing up.
Yeah, and they're growing up. So as little budding actors, they're going to be very like, oh, gosh and bother, how are we going to do this?
What was the kid behind us, as soon as Harry Potter hits the screen in the swing, goes, he's got whiskers. It's like yes, he's growing up, you know. Yeah. He is 22 years old or something.
Agree with, in the chat room a while back when we were playing the trailer, they said that Ron and Harry both look terrible, and they do both look terrible.
Ron is not growing up.
They've not grown into their features at all, and I don't think
Toby Maguire thing going on where it's like he's kind of growing up, but not.
He looks okay from some angles, but not from all.
It's a good thing that this is the end, because I don't think we've got these. I don't think these don't kids think have got another film in them. You know?
Yeah, I really don't think.
Well, the thing that annoys me is I have this with all the negativity I have towards this film and how much I hate it. I'm really looking forward to the next part, because we all know the next bit is the one we want to watch.
Yeah, because the end of this film builds up to
What I love is on the poster for this film, or for the teaser poster. The new poster has come out now, but the original teaser poster was a poster of Hogwarts in flames.
Yeah.
It's not even in this film.
Of course.
That doesn't come until the part two, you know? And it's like, that's what we're waiting for. We're waiting for the epic war.
I kind of expect that now. It's the Harry Potter trilogy. It's all hype. I'm sorry. That sounds really horrible, but...
Yeah, and we've actually got a little bit more Harry Potter to talk about in the after show, because which will hopefully make you laugh.
I don't know. I found it fun towards the end. I will see the next one.
We have to finish it now.
Yeah,
we
have to finish it, because the film, actually, the only point I was entertained was towards the end. The rest of it, I was actually getting really restless and wanted to leave at some point. I was bored out of my mind.
Here's the caveat, because we're going to say, you know, are we going to recommend this film or not? Yeah. I am going to recommend this film, and I'm going to say it is a good film. It is well done. It is well produced, well performed. Visual effects are good. It's a Harry Potter film. It looks good. Mm. Here's the caveat, though. No, it is a part one. And no, it doesn't finish before you go see this film. Because I don't know how much clearer they could make the fact that it's a part one. There was a row of girls in the cinema last night who, when the film finished, I was standing there waiting to see if there was anything at the end of the credits. Everybody else had left, and they were chatting. And they were going, oh, it's so disappointing. Where's the ending? Why don't we know what... It's like, didn't you read the poster? Didn't you look?
No one is going to.
That's the thing.
Actually,
so heavily publicized the fact that it is split in two.
This film might not do that well, because if you don't know that it's...
No, it'll do well. It'll do well.
But
if
you don't know that it is a part one, you're going to be fucking disappointed.
Make it very clear. For a completionist point of view, it is half a film. Be aware that it is... Coitus Interruptus. Be aware that it does say it doesn't actually say it, but it is to be continued. In June next year, we get the finale. Okay, so just be aware of that before going to see it. All of that being said, if you're a Harry Potter fan and you like the last film and you want to see the magic, go see it. You know,
go see
it
anyway.
Just don't be disappointed by the ending.
I'm not letting her go last, so you do your thing.
I would not recommend it. I would recommend that you rent it out before you see the final one. I would not pay $15 to see that. If I had have known, I wouldn't have gone. And I mean that.
Do you know what I'm hoping they do? Quite frankly, I'm hoping that when the second part comes out, I'm hoping they show it as a double feature.
Yeah.
That's exactly... Well, that's pretty much my follow-up. I would actually say don't go see this film. I would say wait, and if they don't release it on... if they don't release it as a kind of...
like a box set, or...?
Well, no, on DVD beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
They'll almost definitely have this as double feature. Mm. And, like, I mean, that will be the way to see this film, just like we did with Lord of the Rings. See the two together at the same time. Because if you don't, this will be a completely annoying situation. And you know what? I think when I get this movie... And this is legit, so no one can get angry at me. I will take both DVDs, compress them down, and cut them into one film. And I don't care if it's 6 hours long. I'll fucking watch it as one film, because that's what it should
be. What I'm hoping is, when it comes out on Blu-ray, it is released as one film. That is what I would really like to see. I would really like them to say, here's the Blu-ray, 4.5 hours, whatever it is, one film. combined. You know, that's what I would like to see. I don't think they'll do that because they want to make money, and the way they make money is by making you buy it twice, basically. So, and that's all this feels like. It feels like a money grab, and that really bugs me. And I don't like this president, and I really, I don't want two Twilight films for the ending. I'm sorry, you know,
Dave. We won't have this as a regular situation because it's only because it's this big, and people have invested six films so far that people will actually pay money to go see this in two parts.
Yeah, but how many films is going to take until people realize that? Because I think people are going to look at this. They're going to look
people
at Twilight,
dumb,
and they're going to go. No, I'm saying I'm talking about producers.
No, because
where they're going to go. It worked for them, and it worked for them. We have this other book. Let's split it in two. We can make three films out of this.
Exactly.
One, you know.
Look, and again, if you had done it right, I would care. The problem is none of these are self-contained movies. You can do that fine. I don't care if you take one book story. Think about films like Do Android Dream... actually even better, Total Recall, which is based on a short story. You can take 200 words and make it into a full film, right? I have no problem with them splitting it up into things, but make them full movies.
Yeah.
Make them an experience I could grab on DVD and go, I'm going to watch part one. And just watch part one. If I can't watch part one and enjoy it, you've failed.
You keep drifting from the mic. Sorry to those who are listening to the audio. Josh gets excited and he drifts from the mic. See, he's used to working with dynamic mics for his own podcast where you can kind of just talk to space. Mm. These are condensers. You've got to talk into the mic. So, thank you, Josh.
That's what Julie learned.
All right, so we've got don't see it, wait, and I say whatever. I said, go see it. Look, it's a Harry Potter film. You're going to go see it. This is the way they're releasing it. You're going to have to go see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Simple as that. Equation.
I just think it's, like directors have done it before. They've taken on much bigger tasks and done them much better. Why couldn't they do this final book in one film?
And it's interesting that if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, they're giving it 76%. And it's so funny looking at the reviews because a lot of them say, yeah, it was really good, but not finished.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's like, and you just kind of think, if it had been Half-Blood Prince, which got like 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, if this had been a complete film, it probably would have scored as much as Half-Blood Prince. Yeah. But because it's not complete, it's going to hurt it.
Mm.
Yep. Well, and you know what? I'm going to be reviewing the second one as a second part, and I will be going into it as if I haven't seen the first part. And I'm going to be reviewing it.
Oh, but see, I don't think you can, because you have to have the first part.
No. I disagree, because I am reviewing it as a separate entity, right? I am reviewing it as a movie, because that's what it is. You can release it in two parts, realistically, but I'm not giving it the full thing.
See, this is an interesting point, because they never actually said it was two films. What they said was, we have one film that we've split in half.
Exactly, and I'm sorry, if you're going to release it at two separate times, 6 months apart, this is exact same thing as if I got Lord of the Rings and said Lord of the Rings is one thing, and I review it as one thing. No, they stand together as individuals, right? And if you're going to call it part one, then I don't know what you're trying to do with film, but we're going to review what you showed us.
Yeah, I think Warner Brothers has made a stumble on this, quite frankly.
But they're still going to make millions.
And they're going to make millions, but they're going to piss off a lot of people. And that's the
Warner
issue.
Warner Brothers doesn't get a shit. They get a cool few mil, and that's it. You know, they'll just make some other movie.
All right, we got to move on. Okay. Let's move on to some news and basically say that Darren Aronofsky is officially signed and confirmed as the director of the new Wolverine movie, which is such an interesting choice for Darren Aronofsky. You think about it, you go, he is not the likely candidate to be directing a film about a guy with claws.
We need to stop flogging dead horses. I think we should let Wolverine die.
However, I'm actually a little bit more interested all of a sudden, because Darren Aronofsky says that the film is going to just be called The Wolverine, and it is not connected to the other films. He's basically said that it is a standalone single adventure.
Mm.
So it's just the character doing an adventure.
Yeah.
And that's actually made me more interested, because suddenly
I'm interested entirely because it's Darren Aronofsky, for one. And second of all, because it's a film about Wolverine. I'm sorry. You can keep doing it. I don't care.
I love the character.
Superman,
I just hated
Batman,
that last film.
Any of these things. You
Wolverine
can just keep
is my
making
favorite
them.
X-Man, but
absolutely.
I think we should give it a couple of years before we start.
Well,
doing
I think
more
what we need is
more
I think
and
we
more
need
remakes.
I think we need this Wolverine movie, because we need to wash the taste of the last one out. And I think Darren Aronofsky is an interesting enough director to really delve into the psyche of Wolverine,
which is kind of
what we need. Yes. You know, so I am kind of intrigued about that. So I'm just fascinated by Darren Aronofsky taking on a superhero film. Such a strange choice. But, you know, whatever. And apparently the part of this deal is he's actually signed a 2-year contract with Fox. So he's going to be making films for at least the next 2 years. And the last 2 weeks, we have shown exclusive Tron clips. Well, not exclusive to us, but Tron clips that have shown up online that Disney has been, like, spoon-feeding out online. And this week is no different. We have one little clip from Tron Legacy. This is a clip where the Sirens, quote-unquote, they're called the Sirens, dress Sam when he first enters the world. So here's a little clip from Tron Legacy.
Can somebody tell me what the... Hey, it's got a zipper.
Attention program. You will receive an identity disc. Everything you do or learn will be imprinted on this disc. If you lose your disc or fail to follow commands, you will be subject to immediate de-resolution.
Mirroring complete. Disc activated and synchronized. Proceed to games.
Games? What am I supposed to do?
Survive.
There you go. So there's another little teasing clip.
Dave, who's the blonde chick? She looks really familiar.
I'm not sure. I'll tell you the truth.
I feel like I've
seen the brunette as well. Yeah, the one that grabs the disc.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like I've seen, they're probably models or something. You know.
Probably.
So who knows? But So I like the fact that they bring back that little piece of dialogue, though, where they sit there and say, everything will be imprinted on the identity disc. If you lose your disc, you'll be subject to immediate deresolution. It's not David Warner delivering it, but it is basically lifted from the first film. And I quite like that. So, you know, once again, more little clips, more teasers. Only, 4 weeks now? Three weeks now. So, very close. We're getting there. Also in the news this week, we found out a little bit more about this new TV version of the Hulk that they're talking about now. I kind of went, TV version of the Hulk, who cares? And then I found out that David Icke, the producer of the new Battlestar Galactica TV series, is producing it. Ooh. And Guillermo del Toro is probably going to direct the pilot episode.
Yay. Well, I think there's an exciting period in time because we've really got that we're starting to get that push of the idea of blockbuster TV, like bigger than we've ever had before. HBO, like people are really, like more than HBO, like The Walking Dead is really, it's the start of it. Mm. And Walking Dead is that point where it's like, The Walking Dead is such a success that people are going, well, hold on. They're starting to realize that people don't give a shit about going to the cinema anymore.
And you know what? Quite frankly, people are much more obsessed by their home stereo systems and their home theaters than they are about real theaters.
The joke we made 5 years ago when Blu-ray started to come out and stuff like this, when we first started seeing the idea of, you know, sort of high def television, stuff like that, we joked about the concept of the fact that we won't need to go to the cinema anymore. Mm-hmm. Cinema's terrified, and it's all a reality to us now.
Hell,
90% of people have a 32 to 40-inch screen in their house.
That's right. And high definition, the whole bit. And when we think about it, it's not the television they're interested in. Yes, they make blockbuster television, they debut it on television, everybody watches it. What they want is the Blu-ray sale afterwards. And that, or the Blu-ray sale, or the online sale, or the stream sale, or whatever it might be to get it onto your high-def TVs. That's what they're looking at. They're looking at moving 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, 100 million units after the fact. And it's the same thing with cinema at the moment. Yes, cinema is great. You make, you know, $100 million at the cinema. That's fantastic. What people don't seem to realize is that they make far more on home video than they do at cinema. Unless it is Avatar, unless we're talking about a huge blockbuster, most films make more money on home video than they do at the cinema nowadays, because they will move, let's say they move 500,000 units. You do the math. 500,000 units multiplied by $30. You know, as opposed
to... Exactly, you don't pay $30 to go see a movie.
That's right. Well, almost.
Well, nearly. You get a Greater Union, you know,
but
see
the point
3D
is,
film.
People will buy that unit, they will rent that unit, they will stream that unit, they'll rent it on iTunes. All those little bits and pieces all add up to huge amounts of money.
They'll buy the soundtrack.
And they'll buy the soundtrack, they'll buy the action figures, you know, go figure. So I think The Incredible Hulk, though, has suddenly become a whole lot more interesting because Guillermo del Toro is a really interesting filmmaker. And the fact that he's co-writing it with David Icke, the fact that he is in line at this point to direct the pilot episode, wow, I think we could finally have a Hulk that we really want, you know?
Well, you've got David Icke, who is really good at pulling out the storyline, like flushing out a storyline to something that would otherwise be intentionally camped.
What would be really interesting, and unfortunately it's not happening, is if Ronald D. Moore was also involved in this, because he was the co-creator of Battlestar Galactica, and if you could bring him on board as well, this guy is a writer and a half.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he's off doing other stuff, so... But I am very interested in the TV's Hulk all of a sudden. I think we could be heading for something good. Now, we have... we were going to line up three trailers, but we're running behind. So we're only going to do two, because we've got to get onto our list of five. The first one is a secondary geek trailer. Now, this was actually... Now, I almost put this aside. I thought, okay, look, it's fun and, you know, and so forth. But I found it online, then... Two people emailed it to me. Then it was Facebook to me. Then it was... So it's like, this has captured the geeks' minds. And everybody wants to talk about John Favreau's new film, Cowboys and Aliens. And the first teaser trailer has come out for this. Now, this I'm more excited about than Green Lantern. Because this looks quite interesting. So here's Cowboys and Aliens.
It's not your lucky day, stranger. Turn around and start walking. I said, turn around and start walking. Do I know you?
You don't remember anything.
Jake Lonergan. Turning you over to the federal marshal.
Boss, Lonergan's in town.
I want that man. You give him to me now, or I'm gonna take him.
Okay, so that looks awesome.
That looks fun.
So I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Look, if John Favreau has taught us anything, it's that his strength is taking a concept which doesn't normally sell, like something that would seem stupid, and make it something that we really take seriously. Exactly. Mm. Or, more importantly, Iron Man. Like, Iron Man is a perfect example of how you can take something which, in essence, is a guy running around in a metal suit and give it emotion and give it depth and give it characters. You know, like, it's hard to kind of do that with a film. And when I heard he was doing this, I was very excited. And to see that trailer just gives me full faith in the man.
Yeah,
I will just
absolutely.
Let him direct it and just let him do what he does, because it will be awesome. I'm making that call now.
I think so. Look, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really good. What time is it? How are we doing?
2:33.
Oh, we're way over. All right, we're going to ditch the last two trailers because we're way over. And yeah, we're way over. We got to get into our list of five.
Mm-hmm.
The other two trailers we were going to show, I'll embed on the site, so you can have a look at them. One is called Battle Los Angeles, which is an intriguing looking trailer. And the other one, of course, is Pixar's Cars 2. But we are running over, so we'll throw those onto the site at some time this afternoon, and you can have a look at those there. Let's get into our lists of five. Now, this is a listener-requested list. Now, I've got the email here. It's from Delta Knight. He says, "Hi, Dave. I've just finished watching Mr. Holland's Opus, and since this is one of the movies that makes me cry at the end, I was thinking it might make a good list of five movies that make you cry. And because our listeners' requests are our commands, our list this week is five films that make us cry."
Mm.
So, who wants to start? Now, okay, we got to set some ground rules here. Last week, we went crazy with these lists in the chat room. And we do encourage you to put your lists up. We encourage you to put your stuff in there. But we're going to continue with our list because it runs the show too long. What we want you to do, though, is take note of your lists. And when we post them into the forum, put your lists up as replies. So everybody gets their stuff up there. Okay, so do put your lists up because we do want to see them. All right? And by the end of the list, if you guys have mentioned stuff that we haven't mentioned, we'll throw it in. Mm. Okay? That's the best way we can do it. All right, who wants to start?
I'll go first.
All right, Celine.
So we start from five, don't we?
We're going to start from five.
My number five movie that I choke up in sometimes, all the time, every time I see it, Little Women. And not the bit where What's-Her-Name
dies.
Which
version of Little
the
Women?
The one with...
Winona?
Winona.
Oh, okay, okay.
And all the other chicks. And Susan Sarandon is the mum. Oh! And it's not the bit where What's-Her-Face dies. It's the bit at the end where it's like, "I love you." And he says something and she's like, "With all my heart." And it's like the last line in the film. And it's so corny. And every time I choke up.
I actually couldn't get through Little Women, but that's me.
Oh, it's a terrible film.
No, I had trouble with the acting and everything else.
It's like the guilty pleasures list. It's
absolutely.
Kind of like,
no.
I choke up every time.
And a lot of people who love Little Women.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get through that version. I like the old version. There's a black and white version, I think, with Catherine Hepburn. I got through that version. That's okay. Mm. But great story.
Mm.
But I just didn't like that version. Mm. But as I say, everybody is different. It's very corny.
And every time there's a tear in my eye.
Cool. I mean, everybody's list is going to have something corny on there.
Oh, yeah.
Josh, what's your number five?
My number five is a film that everybody knows is one of those kind of films, but my actual moment is a lot different to most people. My number five is Castaway, and it's not for the Wilson bit that everybody likes and everybody always says about. It's actually the bit when he gets back, finally makes it home, and there's that bit just after the party where he's just standing there, and he picks up the lighter and just clicks it, and the flame comes out, and he just bursts into tears. That is such a choke-up moment for me, because you can just imagine this guy has been struggling to survive for, years, and just to find fire and a stick, and just to be able to come back to that is just such a choke-up moment, and I adore that scene.
I hadn't thought about Castaway. Castaway is actually a good film. I quite like Castaway.
Respect.
My number five is actually... David Murray's film. This is Mr. Holland's Opus. If you haven't seen Mr. Holland's Opus, it's an okay film. It's not a brilliant film, and I sat there watching it. It's a great performance from Richard Dreyfuss, but it's interesting because it's one of those films where, and I don't know, he actually talked about being sad. It's one of those films where throughout the entire film, everything that could possibly be bad in this guy's life happens. You know, his son is born deaf, and his music never happens, and his job is cut, and it's a trial and tribulation film, and there's moments of joy throughout it. But I actually choked up at the ending because I am a sucker, and you'll see this from my list. I am an absolute sucker for films that actually make you cry because people are appreciated.
Yeah.
And Mr. Holland's Opus's finale is all about him coming in and everybody is there, and they're basically doing something for him.
Mm.
And it's the first time in the film where he truly feels like he is appreciated.
Mm.
And that just chokes me up. And this is a feel, it's that almost tears of joy where you sit there and go, finally.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that the moment where you go, it was all worth it. Yeah. You did make a difference, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, a lot of the films for me, it's a mixture of sad and joy. Mm. Because it's interesting what chokes you up. Anyway, so I would say that, and he was actually saying that he would like his list to be on sad. I don't think it's the sad parts of Mr. Holland's opus that teared me up. It was that moment at the end that really got me. Mm. Number four,
this is a movie I've never cried as much as I did in this film. Like, I actually had, it's one of those movies where when the credits roll, everyone's doing this.
Yeah.
that was really good. And neither of you have seen it, and that is The Boys Are Back with Clive Owen.
No, I haven't seen it yet. I do have to watch that.
Either it was just because I went in with totally low expectations because I'm not a fan of Australian film. Mm. I was very shocked and surprised by this film, and it is, in some scenes, unbearably tragic. And there's kids, and one of them throws a tantrum because his mommy's dead, and it's just like, he just wants a hug, and it's so sad, and then he gets a hug, and everyone was crying, and yeah, everyone in our row was in tears several times in this film. The whole way through, all you could hear was just in the background.
Yeah.
Cool. You're number four, Josh.
My number four is actually just, like, due to shock more than anything. I think that it brought out a huge amount of emotion in me, which was Waltz with Bashir, which is that final 2 minutes where it cuts straight out of that sort of cartoon style into real life, and you just realize that everything you've been watching, even though it's hyper stylized and even though, you know, sort of it's all sort of word of mouth and stuff like that, actually happened. It was real, and it is one of, you know, the world's greatest tragedies, just to see this entire city destroyed over such a stupid thing, and just to watch the faces and just hear that crying as it fades out, and you can still hear the world. It just decimates you as a person just to kind of watch that, and you will be shaken if you see it. So yeah, definitely, that's my number four.
Excellent. All right, my number four is Pixar's Up. The first 10 minutes is devastating.
It is. Yeah.
Absolutely devastating.
Brilliant.
Luckily, the rest of the film, absolutely, it's beautifully handled. Is it manipulative? Absolutely. Does it set the tone for the entire film? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it because the film then pumps you full of joy throughout the rest of the film. But we needed to establish why he was the
and
way he
nice
was.
It's nice to see kids' films occasionally cater to the adults who are bringing their children to watch the films, but in a very subtle way. Like, I think Shrek did it, the Shrek number one did it really well as well. Occasionally there were kind of winks to the camera and hints. And it's nice to see that they are catering to the mum and dad
it's
who
a family
are bringing
film.
Their
and nobody,
it's
it
a
truly,
family film.
It's a family film, and nobody
film.
Does it better than Pixar.
Yeah, and Toy Story as well.
I've always said throughout my entire teenage and adult life, the best kids' films are the films that appeal to adults as much as kids. And those that just aim at the low bar, just aim at kids, are the ones that fail dismally because we don't give credit to kids. Kids have a lot more in them than we give them credit for, and we need to really trust that they'll go along on that ride. And Up is brilliant, you know? And it was one of the highlights of that year of a film, and it's that opening sequence is so tenderly handled.
Yeah.
That it's just amazing.
And there's no dialogue either.
No.
No dialogue at all, and it's just really, really well done.
Absolutely excellent. You're number three.
I have two number threes.
How can you have two number threes? That doesn't even make sense.
Because I just thought of one that's not on my list.
Well, then put it in an honorable mention. You can't have two threes. I'm sorry. I'm vehemently against that.
Okay, fine.
It's a list of five, not a list of six.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'll put one of them as an honorable mention. Okay, well, my number three, I saw it twice at the cinemas, and both times I choked up in the exact same bit, and there were tears coming out of my eyes.
I love films that do that.
I saw it twice. That was The Road, and it's the scene where, not the overall, you know, film is fucking bleak, but it's the scene where, again, it's a child crying. It's just the thing that gets me every time when the boy is grabbed up by the dude, and the dad uses like this their second last bullet to kill him, and the kid gets covered in like guts, and it's the scene where he's holding his head in the water and he's washing, and the kid's like bawling his eyes out, and the water's obviously really cold, and he's there and he's cradling his son, and it's just a really beautiful tender moment. I cry every time.
I can see that, actually. Yeah. It didn't actually make me cry, but I can actually see how that would really
I saw
affect.
It twice in the movies, like a week apart, and I knew that scene was coming. I was like,
I think you're brave to have actually seen that film twice at the movies, quite frankly.
Well, I love that movie. So,
that movie
the bleaker, the better.
That movie is hard work.
It's like giving birth.
It's like, it's a great film, like, but it's hard work. Number three.
Number three is Shawshank Redemption.
You know, I knew that was going to be on your list.
Yeah,
it's so funny. Katie and I were talking about this morning.
Shawshank Redemption goes on my list for the same reason that yours went on yours, Dave.
Yeah, I don't judge you for it. It's a great film.
But that's what I'm saying. It's that whole feeling that at the end of it, it's just that final moment where they both just get to really relax. It's that moment where he just gets what he always wanted.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
I wasn't criticizing your choice. I just was saying, I just knew it was on your list. Mm. I didn't put it on
it
my list.
Be,
and
man,
to anyone
you know
who has not seen that film...
It won't
film,
be if you mention it more than five times.
Mm. Yeah. To anyone who has not seen that film, go see it.
Yeah, I said that to Katie actually
it's
this morning.
Fantastic.
When we were discussing this list, I was saying, we were talking about Shawshank, I said, you have to see this movie. And she goes, and let me just explain something about my wife. She actually doesn't like crying at movies, but she is a sucker for crying at movies. If I get a small lump in my throat, I look over, she's in tears, right? She will cry at the drop of a hat. But she doesn't like crying in movies. So she actually avoids films that will make her cry. And she's avoided Shawshank Redemption because she knows it will make her cry. Mm. And I said, she's going to have to bite the bullet and see that one, though, because it is a great film. My number three is Four Weddings and a Funeral, the Mike Newell film. That funeral scene is devastating because you've had this light, fun film where they've gone through all the weddings, blah, blah, and then the guy dies. Mm. And there's that one funeral, and it is the speech, the eulogy that is given at that funeral, which is so tender.
It's so very British, too,
and
isn't
so
it?
British, and he's so heartfelt in delivery. You just sit there and go, that is the sweetest thing I've ever heard, because you can feel the love pouring out of this guy when he gives this eulogy. And it's just an amazing performance, for one, and it's an amazing scene. And then the film does one of the hardest things in the world, which is then steers it straight back into comedy.
Mm. Yeah.
It's such a hard thing to do those gear shifts.
Only the British can do that.
Only the British can do it really well, and it is such a good film. But that sequence is amazing, and that sequence will decimate my wife every time she watches it. She will just be a puddle on the floor. Without doubt. All right, you're
number
two.
Number two? What's my number two? Ah, yes. This old nut. The Lord of the Rings trilogy. There is at least 2 points in each film where I will break out into tears.
Okay, and before you tell me which they are...
I can't even remember. I know.
I will tell you
will
that Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, is actually in my honorary mentions as not crying. One of the things... I don't actually...
Well, no, but that's what I mean. It's just really like, no!
I don't...
Yes!
It's funny. I don't cry that much in movies.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
There are only a couple of movies that have really reduced me. I mean, I'll get dusty, I'll get lumps in my throat. To actually physically cry doesn't happen that often with me. Lord of the Rings has a moment in it, in Fellowship of the Ring, that brings a lump to my throat every time I see the film. I know it's coming. I know exactly what's going to be said. Every single time, though, I get that lump in my throat. It's like, it's that thrill, that moment where you sit there and go, that's just a... And funnily enough, it is Liv Tyler. And it is where she says, if you want him, come and claim him.
Yeah.
That moment... always great puts a moment. Lump in my line, and it's a lump in my throat, and it's something about her delivery, something about the build up to that sequence. It is just an amazing moment, and for me, that is just like that is the ultimate moment in the entire series of films where you sit there and go, that is what you
and
want to
recapture. Also for me in the Fellowship, the scene just after Gandalf gets taken by the Balrog. It's not right when he gets taken by the Balrog, because at that point you're sort of...
It's the teary moment afterwards.
It's the bit afterwards where they've got the really ethereal elvish music and they're all running across the rocks and it's in like slow motion and then they stop and they're like, we have to keep going, and Frodo's like, no, and then they're like, ah, it's great.
Josh is looking at us mocking me at this point. Anyway, but it didn't make my list because it's not actually tears, it was a lump up. But every single time I watch that film, that will do it to me. And I don't know why. Josh, your number two.
My number two is a film which I will actually say to those that do not easily handle tears, this film could actually, like, hurt you. Like, no, I mean, actually,
all right, so this,
like,
is Katie Stay Clear movie.
Yeah, no. This is, it's one of those films that will actually, it stayed with me for probably a good solid month, and it affects you in ways that just films are not supposed to that heavily, but... the film is The Boy in Striped Pajamas, and the final moments of that film, you just, you just feel broken. Like, there's a part of you that thinks there's a line you're not supposed to go to in films, and to watch that crossed, and again, to really let it sink in that this sort of stuff happened.
There are moments in Schindler's List that do that to me as well. It's
Well, like, that's the thing. I mean, I've seen Schindler's List, but this hits really hard for me because it's like, it's, again, it's one of those moments you're not supposed to go to. And when you do, it's like to sit there and sort of have it sort of, they don't even go over it quickly. There's no sort of mulling. They stop and they make you take in the moment. And then they just fade out and give you credits. And it's just, to get that is just so brutal. It's just probably the most brutal film I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's fair. I've really got to see that film. It's one of those films where I look at all the time and I sit there and go, I must see that film, but I know it's going to be I know it's going
to
be hard.
You need the energy to expel that much emotional...
Okay. There was no energy left. I went straight home and I went to bed after that. And I had a night of drinking planned. I just went, I'm going home. And I left everyone and I went home.
Okay, my number two is doesn't have the emotional weight that it used to. But in 1982, no film reduced entire cinemas to tears like E.T. Is it completely manipulative? Oh, God, yes. But this is a film that will, first of all, drag you through the tears of sorrow because E.T. dies, and then drag you through the tears of joy because he comes back again. The last 25 minutes of E.T. is an emotional roller coaster, and to this day still holds up. It is probably the greatest family film ever made because it appeals to every single age and every single demographic.
It's a beautiful film.
And if anybody in there, and there's a lot of young people who have not seen E.T., this is a must-see movie because this is a film that changed the face of cinema. We talk about those defining moments. This is a film that changed the face of cinema. This is a film that really put Spielberg on the map. I mean, he was already successful. He'd already had Jaws. He already had Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He already had Raiders of the Lost Ark. But E.T. turned him into the multi-billion dollar man. I mean, this film was the biggest film of all time until Titanic came along. You know, but yes, it just grabs at your heart and just punches it around, and you're crying over a piece of rubber latex. But that doesn't matter.
But yeah, it's done well. It's like in Alien, for example. It's just a dude in a suit, but if you do it well.
And let me tell you, this is the story I was telling Josh the other day, and I was telling Katie this morning. I was 15 when E.T. came out, right? And then my mother had actually just come back from America. She goes, you've got to see E.T. It's amazing. It'll make you cry. And I went, nothing makes me cry.
15, I'm tough.
15 years old. I'm tough. Nothing makes me cry. And of course, you know, the hardened 15-year-old who doesn't want to look bad is sitting there. And of course, you get to that moment. And she looks over at me and is like, no, this is just something in my eyes. It's like, but you can't help yourself.
Yeah.
You just cannot help yourself. And as I say, by today's standards, it doesn't quite have the same emotional impact that it did back in 1982. But in 1982, that is the film that made everyone cry. You know?
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Josh, no. Celine, you're number
one. Celine, my number one, and everyone will laugh.
I'm not
going to laugh. Audio listeners included.
We're not allowed to laugh. We set that rule.
You will all laugh every time. And I actually watched it recently. And when I say recently, I mean about 2 months ago. And I cried. And I was in a public place. The Neverending Story. The scene where Artax dies and that little kid is like hysterical and he's pulling at the reins.
I'm not going to laugh
Artax!
At you because even though it didn't make me cry, that made a lot of people cry. Yeah. That sequence was a very emotional moment.
It's very emotional.
Unfortunately, Neverending Story never actually grabbed
me. But you know why? It's a tacky, tacky film. The reason why I choke up every time is because the first time I saw that movie, I was really little. Mm. And it's just been, since then till now, like one of those childhood favorites. So every time I see it, I cannot help but cry in that scene. I cried when I was like 8 when I saw it for the first time. And I cry now, even now. We were watching it in the store where I work, and there was a customer, and I was standing there tearing up in front of a customer. I was like, I'm sorry, this movie is
My number one is another film exactly like that. We'll come back to
that. Do your one first.
No,
Josh's one I think needs to be left to the end.
Okay, yeah, my number one is exactly the same situation. I've seen the film a million times, and every single time it will make me cry. And we're talking about full tears. And once again, it's the Mr. Holland's Opus scenario. It's a particular button with me when people feel appreciated. When you finally get to that point where a person feels like they meant something in the world. And it's a particular button with me, and that's A Wonderful Life, 1946.
Yeah.
Film, every single time I watch it, and it surprised me, because the first time I ever saw the film, I was in my 20s, and I was watching it all by myself in an apartment on VHS, and it got to that point, the point where they sit there and say, George Bailey, the richest man in town, and they're all giving him money, and it's like after everything he's been through. And I found myself just in tears. Mm. And I went, this is not right. Like, what is wrong with me? And then a couple years later, I saw the film, and I was in tears. And just talking about it now, it puts a lump in my throat.
Yeah.
And it's this amazing moment in that film that I just cannot help myself. It just absolutely touches me.
Mm.
And every time I've seen that film, it has had exactly the same emotional response with me. So you're number one.
My number one now. People are going to laugh at this one, and I'm okay with that, right? But let me explain quite seriously before we go into it that this had an effect like no other film I have ever seen, okay? This film reduced me to tears when I got home, not when I saw it, because I was in shock, and I stayed in shock for months over this film because...
I want to see this film!
You've seen it, Dave. Oh, okay. You've seen it. Now, this film, it broke a childhood part of me.
Something broke
something inside of me, and I am actually serious, even though everyone will laugh when I say what it is. It has affected me and will affect me for the rest of my life because they did what I didn't think you could give somebody subject matter like this and just say, go with this, and I didn't think you could do this much damage with a film. Wow. But Wolverine X-Men did that much damage. I am not joking.
No, I actually
this is
agree.
A serious point.
I agree.
That film,
sorry, I shouldn't be laughing.
I was actually shell-shocked after that film, and I totally agree with you, Josh. Some part of me died. Like, the child in me was stabbed and had a finger cut off. Yep. Like, it was like a little piece of me died. And I totally agree with Josh.
It completely didn't have that effect on me at all. No. I just sat there watching it and went, well, that wasn't very good.
Something died in me, Dave, when I watched that film. And even today, I will never watch that film again. I will never go near a project that has the same people collaborated. I cannot stomach the amount of damage they did with that film.
I recently had an experience where someone was like, oh yeah, Wolverine X-Men Origins, that wasn't such a bad film. And I stood there and I was like, don't say anything. I actually couldn't discuss this film. I was like, I'm like, I have that blocked in my mind, and I have a rule where I will not talk about it anymore, just because it's a wound that I don't want to reopen.
Mm. Wow, it's just a movie, guys.
No, it's not just a movie, Dave.
The Wonderful Life is just a movie too, Dave.
Sure, I agree with you. It's just it tugs on the heartstrings.
Yep,
but to have a film that's so dramatically changed your life just because it was a ordinary.
Yeah. It was that bad.
I look at Wolverine and I go, it's just so mediocre. I didn't even think it was that.
No, but that's the problem, Dave, is that it actually affected me because it's like if you had any heart and any love for what we were talking about, like any love for X-Men, the cartoons, Wolverine, you wouldn't have let that happen.
Just in general.
Like, I mean, it's so mediocre and it's so pieced together.
No, but it's like doing this to the fucking audience, just going, ha, fucking comic book nerds, have a fucking go at this, you pricks. Like, it's sort of like, thanks, douchebag. Wow, that actually really hurt.
Yeah.
I actually felt insulted after that film. I was shocked, and it took me till I got home to go, that was really shit.
Yes, but the question
is, and it took a few weeks to actually get over it.
Did it make you cry?
No, it made me choke up.
Oh, okay. Something broke. Does that count?
I talked about that film for like 4 hours after we walked out of it.
Callison says Transformers killed his childhood. Yeah. Then G.I. Joe burned the corpse.
And then Wolverine Origin peed on the ashes. Agreed.
Wow, you guys all take movies far too seriously.
Only some.
Just when we're passionate.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Are we doing honorable mentions?
No, absolutely not.
Are we doing honorable mentions or are we not? Sure,
throw some honorable. My honorable mention was Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, but yeah, go for it.
I got a few Children of Men. I always choke up in that film. Good I know film. You guys yeah,
no,
are
love
fans, but yeah,
I
just, no, he is.
I choke up,
and there are many scenes where I have cried. Again, another movie where at the end everyone's like, "I'm fine," and they're all wiping
I love
tears
Children
away.
Of Men.
Yeah,
I think it was
the
great
whole
film.
Row in front of me, everyone was crying. Like, the
I
whole
didn't
cinema.
Make me cry, but I love the film.
Yeah, a really good film, and not because I cried, but because it had that really uplifting human thing you were talking about, where it's all about go people, Defiance with Daniel Craig is a really great film.
Yes,
and it is the end scene that they've fucking survived this, they've built a community in the woods out of like grass and twigs and fought off fucking Nazis. And then it's the end rolling credits where they have what those actual real people did and where they went after this happened. And a lot of them went to America, and it was really amazing reading about these people and seeing images of these actual people, photographs from the 40s of these people. And that's the moment in that film when it smacks you across the face, going, no, actually, this is based on a true story. And that's when you go, holy fuck, yeah. Because, you know,
there's a couple of films I felt that way about. One was directed by the same guy, funnily enough, is called Glory by Edward Zwick. And another one is, as we've said it before, Schindler's List. Yeah. Both of these films had
And it's sort of like we watch films about war or the Holocaust and they're terrible and we get that. But when you actually have characters based on real people, that's when it really can drive home, because that's when you go, fuck, this actually did go
that's,
on.
That's
and
actually
it
one of
reminds
like,
you
so powerful,
that
yeah.
shit like that should not ever fucking happen again. And then moving to something far much lighter, An American Tale, the bit where he gets in the bottle and he gets swept around the ocean and there's like the evil...
I love that
There's
film.
Like the evil wave that looks like a demon and it's really scary and it tries to kill him. Yeah, again,
American Pie is a great film.
Jews going to America.
I saw that at the cinema.
I loved that movie.
I'm old, did I tell you?
I love An American Tale. It is a childhood favorite.
You got any honorable mentions? Or did Wolverine destroy you again?
No, that's it.
Okay. The other thing that I thought I'd throw out there, if you really want a tearjerker, I mean, the film that is custom made to be a tearjerker, take a box of tissues with you, watch Terms of Endearment. This film will destroy you.
I haven't seen it.
And a made-for-television movie, which when I was working at a video store many years ago, we used to actually say to people, you are guaranteed to cry. If you don't cry, I'll give you your money back. Which was a Mark Harmon made-for-TV movie called After the Promise, and which is all about a Depression-era guy who loses his kids. And the whole film is about him trying to get his kids back from the state.
Those movies, you know? Movies about getting your kids back.
Yeah,
they just get you every time.
You add kids to the equation, especially to somebody who's had kids. Wow. I actually have a friend in Melbourne. His name is Bill. And we actually went to see Dead Calm together. I don't know if you've ever seen the film Dead Calm with Nicole Kidman. The opening scene where the kid goes through the windshield of the car, he actually almost left the cinema. Because he had just had a child and all he could think was his baby going through the windscreen of the car. He almost walked out at that moment.
Wow.
The film almost lost him in the first 5 minutes of the film. So it's something, there's a real connection to that. Anyway, good lists, guys. Good list. We had somebody threw out, I think it was Delta, said, what was my number one? I obviously just brushed the name. It's a Wonderful Life is the name of the film.
Yeah.
All right, we'll have that list up on the forum today or tomorrow anyway, so you can catch up with all those lists. And once again, put your lists up there. You know, let's see what you guys, let's see what makes you guys tick. Now you know a little bit more about us.
I feel like I've opened up to the
Japanese. Bared my soul. All right. I think we're done. Let's get out of here. If you agree or disagree with anything that we have to say on this show, you agree or disagree with our reviews, you want to put your own comments in there, send it to feedback@geekactually.com. Voicemail us at 02-801-1-3167. That's a Sydney number. If you just want to Skype, Skype ID is geekactually. Geekactually stuff at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. You get mugs like this fine mug, there you go, and t-shirts and stuff like that. Fan page, facebook.com/geek. Actually, I'm rushing through it because we're over time. You can also catch our other fine shows, Tech Actually and the Geek Actually After Show, which is actually just about to come up. There's a lot of actuallys in that sentence. We're going to have to do something about the names. You can search for everything on iTunes. Just look for Film Actually, Tech Actually, or Geek Actually on iTunes. Or just go to our website, geekactually.com. Everything is there. Find out everything all about us. And, of course, we record these shows live. Now, for the people who want to join us live but always feel that we're a little bit too late in America, as of next week, we are rotating the times on the shows. So you'll be able to tune in at 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Daylight Savings Time, which is, I think we worked it out at some point, it's like 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. So come, the first show up will be Film Actually, then Tech Actually, then the After Show. We're just rotating film and tech around. Okay? So we're starting at the 12 o'clock mark with Film Actually as of next week. Now, we have a couple of people we want to throw some shout-outs to. So first we'll start with the Movie Fan House. Now, I'm not going to give a lot of detail on them because they're changing their name again, and I got to get all the details from them. MovieFanHouse.com. You can find out about them. They're starting a new website and they're rebranding. So I believe it's called reboundradio.com, and I think their new podcast is called Speak, speak. It's called Between the Credits, which is a great name for a podcast. I think that's what they're doing. So I will find out more information about that. But go to moviefanhouse.com. Hopefully you'll find some stuff out. Realjunkies.com. R-E-E-L. Search for them on iTunes or go to weekendronan.com. These are both movie podcasts. If you like movie podcasts, check them both out. They're both quite good. Josh, you have a podcast and a mustache.
Yep. RawDLC.com is the website. Go check out everything gaming related. We also have a live show which goes out on Tuesdays at 8 p.m., which is... What are you doing? 8 p.m., which basically goes out and we do a live broadcast pretty much the same as Dave does. And I also have a mustache, and the reason we have a mustache is we're driving for Movember. We are driving for Movember to get money to raise awareness for men's health, things like prostate cancer, depression, stuff like this. If you've got a few bucks, either jump over to the website and donate on the donation can we have there, or just type Movember into the search and you will find a post which will link you to the thing if you want to donate straight to the site.
Fantastic. And I forgot to mention the David Storms America stuff at the head of the show, but I'm not going to mention because I don't want to defuse you. So just say David Storms America, look for it on the site,
and you'll know all about it.
All right? Now, I think that's it. I think we're going to get out of here. Anybody got anything you want to throw out? Where can we find out more about you?
Facebook, and if you want to me to add you as a friend, please tell me why. Not why, but where you saw me. Otherwise, I will ignore you.
And that is
and
Celine
no,
Roberts.
I did not write a book, and no, I will not accept your friend request if you think that I ate candle wax as a child.
Okay,
it's part of the book.
All right, yeah, that's right. We talked about that last week. Josh, you've said your bit.
Yep, I've done my bit.
You've done your bit. My bit. You follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh, and that's all I'm going to say because everything else I've already said. So we're going to get out of here. You finished?
Yep.
You all good? All right, in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies.
Riddles, David, riddles!
Riddles! No, my quote is my quote. They can say whatever they want in their quote. we're going to go out, as we always do, with a little piece of music from the films that we have reviewed. I don't actually have the soundtrack for the new film yet, but we do have Harry Potter music. And so we're going to play the Harry's Wondrous Theme, it's called. Harry's Wondrous World, it's called, by John Williams, as our going out music. We'll see you all next week. Bye now.
Bye. Bye.